Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
On the order, Mookie Betts, first pitch with a fly ball to right field. Heading on back is Renfro at the wall, and it's gone! A home run! Mookie Betts is doing merely everything. A home run, two stolen bases, couple of runs scored, and on the first pitch of the bottom of the sixth, he hits a home run to right.
I have to say, it is quite weird after a 60-game season of some thrilling highlights from Padre voices like Jesse Agler, Ted Leiter. It's a little weird hearing a different voice, but we are in the World Series, and yes, Mookie Betts did, I wouldn't say merely everything, he did everything last night and was on full display. Welcome in to Gwen and Chris. Only half of the version is here today, however. Gwen, here, check. Scraby,
check.
Here, check. Chris Ello,
not here.
Not so much.
And
not
we're gonna
so
let much. We're He's gonna not... let Twitter speculate as to why.
Yeah. Well, Twitter will do that. There's no doubt about it. So, yes, my co-pilot today will be Mr. Matthew Scraby, the guy Chris and I love to hate, but the guys that you guys love out there. So can you give yourself a round of applause for being my co-pilot?
Oh, wow. I get a round of applause today, do I? I wish I would have had it ready. This is so me.
So Scraby can't even give this his own self a round of applause, but we certainly appreciate you lending us your ears for the four-hour show today. We got a jam-packed show for you. Scott Miller will join us. Mark Ziegler of the San Diego Union-Tribune will join us, talk a little Aztec basketball. And in our next segment, I will present to you guys, Scraby and I are trying something a little different. I will present to you guys my monologue and why I believe the Padres are really on the verge of having their own Mookie Betts here in San Diego. We'll get into it when the time comes. But first and foremost, since you are my co-pilot, Matt Scraby, how are you today, my man?
I am so good because Mookie Betts got me a free taco last night. That's all I cared about in the game last night. You guys were a little bit off of when he was going to get the nation a free taco, but it did indeed happen. So
yeah, he was running amok out there, so they say, and he got everybody Locos Tacos. If that's your flavor, you like to have Doritos Locos. I know you enjoy it very much so, but I do too. I just, I'm trying to stay away from Taco Bell these days, but no doubt about it. A lot of different storylines going yesterday. Mookie Betts became the storyline, but going into the game, it certainly was Clayton Kershaw getting game start number one. You know how my other co-pilot feels about Clayton Kershaw, and he let everybody know about it yesterday. We'll get into that a little bit later, too, as well. But Clayton Kershaw was dealing yesterday. We had some sound from him. Here's what he had to say about his start last day.
Didn't feel too different other than being not in our home ballpark or being on the road or anything like that. But, like you said, I've gotten to do this before. And, the last couple haven't gone so well for me. So I'm fortunate to get out there in game one and get another chance at it. And, we pulled out a win tonight and our guys played awesome. And we're excited to come back tomorrow and try to do it again.
Yeah, certainly. Clayton was really good yesterday, and he made the point to say that he was only as good as his last start. And listen, I think yesterday when you look at the numbers and what he was able to put together, Scrape, he was pretty spectacular. He only had the 8 punch outs. Only. He can get into the double digit range, but he really stymied the Reds offense. And it's not that the Rays offense. Yeah. It's not that the Rays offense has been electric, but they had a real hard time with Clayton Kershaw last night.
I really like how he handles everything as well, because everything is about his postseason record and everything is about how he pitches terribly during the postseason. And it doesn't seem like it really affects him at all. I don't know if he's the one paying
anymore.
Attention to things. Anymore, maybe?
Anymore.
Maybe. Oh, you think it did earlier on in his career?
I don't know that it necessarily affected him, but at least his body language in the past was different. You know, he had the rough start against the Braves, and when they showed him in the dugout, he just looked like, man, well, I had a bad one today. He wasn't like – in past, it seemed like he was beating himself up immediately when he got in there. And maybe he was in that Braves start, but it certainly didn't – he didn't show that. And so, yeah, I thought that his – you're right. He seemed to be handling it a lot better now.
And I think he's kind of embraced his own mortality. So whatever he does now and going forward is just icing on the cake for his career. And he also is the second pitcher ever to have over 200 strikeouts in the postseason. So I know that we're going to talk about Chris and his tweet and his feelings about Clayton Kershaw in a little bit. But at some point, I mean, you kind of have to start paying attention to the numbers. And I am the guy who was fully on the Clayton Kershaw postseason, he's terrible bandwagon. And for a little bit, I still am. But at the same time, I'm looking at his numbers, and it's just hard to actually think that he's bad in the postseason.
Yeah, I think part of the noise you hear is, you know, being that we're in San Diego, is that nobody likes the Dodgers. Everybody hates the Dodgers. So clearly you're going to jump on anything Clayton Kershaw or anybody wearing a Dodger uniform does wrong, right? I think, you know what was interesting about that game is, I'm not going to lie, through the first 3 innings, I had a hard time seeing the Dodgers do anything because Glasnow was nasty. He was 98 to 100. Breaking ball was falling off the table. And it really looked like through the first 3 innings, nobody had an answer. But as Chris made the point yesterday, he made it in the terms of over the course of a series. But it was almost like after they saw Glasnow through one time through the lineup, things started to kind of open up now that they got a look on him. And the avalanche started in the 4th inning, and it just seemed like it continued throughout the course of that game.
Here's Tyler Glasnow, right?
Yeah.
Tyler Glasnow talking after the game about how he made adjustments, but he just didn't pitch great.
I felt maybe a bit rushed in the beginning, but like I said, I think I made the adjustment. So I think most of it later on was just kind of mechanical, like getting a little rushed. But I think the beginning it was a little sped up, but the adjustments were made, and I think my timing started to feel a little bit better after that.
Well, a little too late for that.
you know what's interesting is somebody posted his doppelganger up there, and you were right.
It's really?
Somebody posted it on Twitter, the side by side, and man, they look even closer alike than I thought. And we're talking—I don't know the actor's name, but he played
Scarecrow in Batman Begins.
He played Scarecrow in Batman Begins. It's pretty spot on, man. They could be twins. That's how much alike they look. Other than the fact that Glasnow's probably about 12 inches taller.
He probably is 12 inches
a full
taller.
Foot.
Yeah, and you guys were talking about last series with the Braves and everything and how the Cody Bellingers of the world, the Max Muncys of the world, the Jock Petersons of the world weren't really contributing. Well, it's kind of swung the other way now, and now you got all those guys who weren't contributing now contributing at a high level by scoring runs to get on the board first, and then you got Mookie on the bases. Like, I picked the Rays in 7 yesterday, and I'm not comfortable with my decision to pick the Rays in 7.
Yeah, at least for last night, tides have turned in terms of Muncy. And all Muncy's kind of started to swing it even in the Braves series. But, you know, Bellinger, Jock, Muncy, those are the guys that struggled during the course of the year. And Dave Roberts said that they wouldn't have a chance to win it unless those guys got swinging it. I guess they pick a good time to start swinging it, game one of the World Series. Here's Dave Roberts talking about the tone that Kershaw set.
He set the tone. He was very good, very efficient. The slider wasn't great early. The fastball was good all night, and the fastball command, the curveball was good. So for us to get us through 6, you know, and kind of match up a little bit. I thought Pedro was really good, and Joe Kelly was good. So it was good to kind of prevent runs tonight.
That there, that first part that Dave Roberts mentioned there about the slider not being very good early, it wasn't. He threw some ones that were up in the zone at home. Tampa just missed them. They didn't. And those are the things that in a World Series against a guy like Clayton Kershaw, you can't miss them. And those guys did, and they missed their opportunities because of it. Because as the game went on, that slider got better and better and better, and it was just a difficult task for the Rays. And then the bullpen came in and did what they did. So that certainly was one of the issues. The other thing Dave Roberts talked about was the decision to pull Kershaw. And I think this is important because you could argue that the numbers that Kershaw have could be because managers have left him out there longer than he should have been out there. Here's what Dave Roberts had to say.
I mean, you just figure he's going to be on regular for his next start. So you got an 8-1 lead, and, you know, with 9 outs to go, we got to be able to protect it.
Yeah. So we'll see how Dave Roberts continues to handle him from there.
On the flip side, though, we were talking about it all year long about how the Rays play the analytics game, and Kevin Cash, the manager of the Rays, pulled Blake Snell a little bit early because of the analytics telling him to do so. Well, last night he kind of like flipped the game plan a little bit and left Tyler Glasnow out there for 100-plus pitches, which I don't know why you would change your game plan in the biggest series of the year, but it just seemed like a really weird place for him to kind of go outside the norm.
I think the circumstances were a little bit different. I think Glasnow was rolling through those first three innings. He threw a lot of pitches to get to that point, but he was pretty much unhittable. The pitches were really because he didn't command the baseball that well. As you heard him saying, he was a little rushed. Balls were up in the zone, so he got to some deeper counts. So his pitch count was high. But at that point, the Dodgers had showed nothing to indicate to Kevin Cash that, hey, they're on him, or they're starting to adjust him. It was nothing like that until the fourth inning, and that's where the Dodgers started to do their thing, and he was able to get out of the fourth and move into the fifth, in which he only got the one out, and things kind of unraveled from there. So I don't necessarily think Kevin Cash went away from what their game plan has been. I just think the game kind of dictated that he stay out there and continue to pitch. Lastly, the base running was simply terrific, and it pretty much boiled down to Mookie Betts. Here's Dave Roberts on the aggressive base running.
It's stolen bases are a thing for me. That's how I create runs. That's how I cause a little havoc on the bases, and so I take pride in stealing bases. And you know, once I get on the base paths, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, touch home, and however I get there is how I get there. But I'm going to be aggressive on the base paths.
Dave Roberts' voice changed a little bit.
Yeah, that was not Dave Roberts. That was Mookie Betts there.
Yeah,
talking
yeah.
about
it
his...
was not labeled correctly. I'll blame someone else for that.
No, but he was terrific, man. The play, the first run they score on the infield in ball, that can't be executed any better. I mean, I don't know that everybody's going to slide in safe, but in terms of the execution part, he was nails. Now, you have to account for his athletic ability, mm-hmm. his timing, his anticipation, because that's really why that play is tough. Diaz is having to come off the bag, and he knows the jump that – he can see it from the corner. The jump that Betts got forces him to not even be able to set and throw. He had to get rid of it as quickly as possible. He put as good of a throw as you could put on the bag. Mookie Betts was just there. He beat it, basically.
Diaz, he did everything that he could have to get Mookie Betts at the plate, but there's no way. John Smoltz did a really good thing last night on the broadcast talking about that specific play where he was kind of explaining, like, he's not trying to steal 90 feet. He's only trying to steal 62 feet. I think he got so exact he said 62 because of his leadoff in the secondary leadoff. So, I mean, we've kind of seen it with Fernando Tatis Jr. a little bit when he's able to feel it and anticipate it. And Mookie Betts was just it's something you probably – I don't know. You can't teach that. You can't teach reaction
you
like
can't.
That.
That's instincts, and that's one of the things we see from Fernando Tatis Jr., and I'll get into that in my monologue. They do – athletes like that, there's just some things that they do that are unexplainable that you can't really teach. That play, although it may seem small in the grand scheme of things, Those are the type of things you can't teach, and I'm getting goosebumps talking about it because I enjoy that part of baseball so much, partly because I couldn't do some of the other stuff. Like, I couldn't hit homers on cue like some of the other cats do can. So I had to take advantage of the little things, and when it pops up, and it generally pops up in the playoffs because everything's so magnified, those things give me great, great joy. And if you like baseball, you gotta respect what the Dodgers did last night in Game 1. All right, let's get to break. When we return, I got that monologue. We're gonna give it a try. I can't guarantee anything. I hope you guys like it, but we're gonna get into it when we return. How the Padres are really, really close to having their own Mookie Betts. This is Gwen and Chris, San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3. Ladies and gentlemen, we are gonna try something a little different today. I very rarely have the opportunity to host a show like I am today. And I know I got my man Scraby here with me to help me navigate the four-hour show today. But I thought I would take some time to tell the story of how I believe the Padres are on the verge of having their version of Mookie Betts. And as I sat back and have watched this playoff run the Dodgers have been on, it's been very apparent why they have gotten to this point in the year, even despite not necessarily being able to play at the level offensively as we've seen them all year. And that reason is Mookie Betts. And you watch this guy, and even when he's not swinging the bat well, he finds ways to affect the game in a major, major way. You look at him on the defensive end. It seemed like in each of the deciding games that the Dodgers were involved in that previous series against the Braves, he made some type of defensive play. You see him last night, and not just last night, really throughout the playoffs, taking bags and really changing the innings. When the Dodgers should probably get no runs in an inning, they find a way to scrape one across, it seems like, when he's on the base pass. And then obviously, when he's swinging the bat at the plate, he is that guy that we consider a five-tool player. He can do everything. We've seen the arm. We've seen the defensive ability with his glove. We've seen the power. We've seen the ability to hit for average. We've also seen the speed. And that brings me to how I believe the Padres are on the verge of having the same thing. You look at Fernando Tatis Jr., and we've watched this kid over parts of two seasons put on an absolute show. Something that I don't think any of us have ever seen in terms, at least in this city, in terms of what he can do to affect the game in different ways. And we've seen it in splurges, right? We've seen him tag up from third base on a shallow pop fly in the infield. We've seen him make unbelievable plays at shortstop. We've seen him mature, make a serious step forward defensively from his rookie season to this past season. And obviously, when the bat is going, there's just not a lot pitchers can do to deal with him. And so you see it not only from the standpoint of on-the-field play, but go back to Mookie Betts for a second, right? When we're talking about off the field, we're talking about leadership. We're talking about diving into the city in which he is now playing for. It was very apparent to Mookie Betts when he got traded to Boston after telling Boston, hey, I want to explore free agency. I want to get to a free agent. He gets traded to the Dodgers, and within a few months, he knew that was the place he was meant to be. He signs the big-term deal there, right? So you got that. He's committed to the city. Right, and now you move to the next part about it, which is leadership. Now, I don't know that he's necessarily the rah-rah type of leadership, but he's willing to get in front of the cameras. Good, bad, indifferent, he's there to answer the tough questions, to answer the easy questions. He's there. He's that type of guy that the city can look to when they got an answer, when they need an answer on something. He's usually the guy that provides it. I mean, now, don't get me wrong. You still have Clayton Kershaw there, who was a Hall of Famer, and not in the making. I think when he's done, he will be a Hall of Famer. You got guys like Justin Turner who have really been Dodger guys since they've arrived, but there's just something different about Mookie, right? There's clearly something different. Now, that brings me back to Fernando Tatis Jr. Same things. Even at the young age of 21, he's already showing those characteristics of being that guy. that stands in front of the camera after a tough playoff loss that eliminates you and is the one that kind of boosts you up for 2021, right? That was Fernando Tatis Jr. You look at him in terms of leadership. Yes, he might be one of the young guys, but is it crazy of me to say that it seems like when he goes, they go, right? That's part of being a leader. And I think as he gets older and he gets more time under his belt, he will also have that those same characteristics of being able to just navigate a team, and he'll be more vocal about it. But lastly, and this is the one that I think is the question that remains, right? It seems like it's moving in our favor, but is he willing to commit to the city in the way that you need a star, much like Mookie Betts, to do? If he is, like I said, we have our Mookie Betts in the making, and it's only going to make this team a tough, tough team moving forward. That's all I got. That's my little monologue. I hope you guys enjoy it. Hey, maybe we'll do it again the next time I get a chance to host a show.
Tony Gwynn Jr., what a nice surprise that was.
I think I did all right my first ball. Like, the whole time I was sitting there talking, my heartbeat was like coming through my chest there.
Why?
Just a little different. Because it wasn't like I was having a conversation. I was like just giving you like a – that felt like a real professional right there, giving like a monologue on why – and I truly believe that, by the way. Fernando Tatis Jr. is on his way. I 1,000% believe that with everything in my heart, that he is on his way to being that type of player. It's just a matter of the consistency and really that's it. The talent is there. It's clear that the some of the intangibles are there, right? Anybody who can pick up the things that infield coach Bobby Dickerson was putting down last year in terms of footwork and just going from damn near, 16 errors, 18 errors?
It was a lot.
Last year? In a half a season to, what, two all year last year? That's a huge, huge step forward. And then one of the things that I also noticed this year that was different about Fernando, he really embraced being the face. Like, he embraced that. And he wasn't afraid, despite him not necessarily speaking perfectly, he wasn't afraid to go up there and answer questions and be, and I appreciate that. I think that's big. And it just seems like he loves it here and that he wants to be here long term. Will that work out? You know, it takes two to tango on that. It seems like the Padres are interested. It's, you know, based on what AJ Preller said, sounds like Fernando's interested. Time will only tell, but it does seem like it's in his spirit to want to be in San Diego and drive this boat basically here.
He's such a San Diego guy too. That's why it just the fans love him. He loves
he fits.
Yeah, he loves everybody that comes out to see him. And it just proved it to you when they won that wild card series and he was waiting outside with all the fans before he got on the bus.
Good point.
He's like, that's like rock star status, and San Diego needs someone to be a rock star in. Well, really, they're the only professional team, so he needs to be the rock star of San Diego, and he absolutely can be that. And right after the season, I think it was the next day, he put up on Instagram, I don't remember the exact thing, but he said, "Work's not over. I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep getting better." And he's already great, and he wants to become better, which is just an awesome thing to hear from
all
him.
All of those things. Because, listen, I think after watching him in his rookie season, it was clear the talent was there, right?
Yeah,
but he went out and got better over that off season, and I anticipate him continuing to get better in other aspects. And it's tough to see, man, where can Fernando actually get better at? Like, he's already, I mean, we are talking about him as an MVP at one point during the season. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's hard to, but that's what players of his ilk do. Like, they find ways to just keep getting better and keep getting better. They grow into who they are, which makes them better leaders. Their experiences in the game and in life make them better leaders and make them better individuals. So it's watching. I couldn't help after watching Betts last night put the performance on that he was putting on, it made me think of Fernando Tatis Jr.
And hopefully we'll see that Fernando Tatis Jr. in the Padres uniform for a very long time, taking on Mookie Betts. And that's going to be interesting over the years to see those two guys go head to head.
It's going to be fun,
yeah,
over the years. Like when the Padres have started to do this, right? You can match position for position. And as you start to do that, when there is a separator, it's usually superstars, right? And the Dodgers certainly have one. He's showing out right now on the biggest stage possible. And I believe the Padres certainly are on their way to having one as well.
And the last thing I have to say about Fernando before we move on is he also gave us one of the greatest quotes of the 2020 season.
We're aiming for the big cake, man.
No doubt. The World Series has never looked so different in our eyes before. We're not calling it that no more. It is the big cake.
That's
what we refer to. No doubt about it. This hour is brought to you by San Diego County BMW Centers through November 2nd. Lease a 2020 BMW X5 S-Drive 40i for $669 a month for 36 months with $5,094 due at signing. Contact a San Diego County BMW Center today for details or visit sdcountybmw.com. All right, let's step away, pay some bills. When we come back, my man Scotty Miller will join us to talk about this World Series and Game 2 and maybe some free agent stuff that we can see coming up here in the offseason. This is Gwen and Chris, San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. The clock totals one junior. Chrisello out for the rest of the week. And so, my co-pilot, Matt Scraby.
What's up?
The guy everybody loves, the guy Chris and I love to hate. No, I'm just joking.
Oh, you know what I listened to last night on the way home? My epic win over the Chris's Fantabulous Sports Game Show over you last night.
Oh, my. You had to remind me about
it.
I'm not going to lie. I haven't been that salty about losing something.
I could tell.
Probably since I was playing. I was salty about that loss yesterday. Mainly because I thought I had it in the bag after you guessed the Cardinals. I was like, I got this. I know who the other ones are. And the game was over, like that.
Go back to yesterday's podcast, hour number 4. It's the first thing on there. It's great. It's an epic win. And please tell me how you feel after you listen to it.
Epic, my. You know what? Coming up at 5 o'clock, we're going to be qualifying listeners for our Gwen and Chris Vegas Vacation Contest. All you need to do is answer a question about something from today's Gwen and Chris show. If you know the answer, you can qualify for a chance to win a 3-night stay with a round of golf for two and a $250 food and beverage credit at Westgate Las Vegas Resort and Casino. But joining us right now to talk a little baseball and a little World Series is my man Scott Miller on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Scotty, how are you today?
Tony, good. How about you, my friend?
I am doing well. Me and Matt watched this game yesterday, and, man, Mookie Betts had his fingerprints all over it, and I couldn't help, besides from thinking about the Padres and them having a chance to have their own version of Mookie Betts in Fernando Tatis Jr., I also couldn't help thinking, man, Red Sox are watching this game like sick to their stomach right now.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody understands that Red Sox move. I mean, Mookie Betts, as you said, he's a legit 5-tool guy. He can beat you, as we saw last night. He can beat you by putting the ball over the fence. He can beat you with his glove. He can beat you with his base running. I mean, this guy is magnetic. He's fantastic. And it's like their ownership, John Henry and Tom Warner, of course, and you know, Warner has already proven in San Diego one of the worst owners in history. But it's like those guys just got bored or something with winning worlds. So, you know, we heard for so long the curse of the Bambino and the Red Sox never won and they always let you down. Then they win in 04. They win again in 07. They win in 13. And then they win again in 18. They've got 4 World Series titles. And it's almost as if these guys have decided, okay, we've done our thing. And the biggest thing now is to save money, and we're kind of bored with winning, and we're just going to strike out on our own path. I don't get it. It's weird.
Right, right. Yeah, I know San Diegans would be feeling quite different out saying that, you know, we're good, we're done winning, we're tired of that right now.
Right?
Scott Miller with us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. Now, the big topic on this show and many other shows across the country is Clayton Kershaw and his postseason performance. We've talked about it ad nauseum on this show. And Chris is officially in the camp that Clayton Kershaw is a good postseason pitcher. What do you think last night did to help Clayton Kershaw and his legacy?
You know, any good performance, let me rephrase that, any dominant performance on an October stage is only going to enhance a legacy. I think Clayton Kershaw, I'm a little mixed on this postseason reputation. I mean, it's undeniable that there have been moments when he's just given it up. But I think that narrative is maybe a little bit too easy, and here's why. Going back to the early 2010s, you know, I mean, when Kershaw was still a young pup that was the ace, you know, back like playoffs, October 2011, 12, you know, way back then, the Dodgers did not build good bullpens, and they tried to do it with starting pitching, and that's all well and good. But what happened is, I think, on a couple of these occasions where Kershaw gave it up, they tried to ride him too hard. And good for him for taking the ball and doing it and saying, fine, ride my back, ride my back. But I think it's the opposite of what we've seen from Tampa this postseason. And I don't like pulling a starter like Tampa Bay pulled Charlie Morton the other day in San Diego in that game. You know, he has a two-hit shutout through into the sixth inning. And his pitch count's low. But the Rays thing is, hey, we don't like guys facing the lineup a third time. We're going to pull him. I think there's a happy medium between that and letting a guy go too long. And I do think the Dodgers, they've let him go too long. Also, when he was carrying the team or trying to, he made several starts in his younger days on 3 days rest instead of a regular rest. So I think I'm not necessarily excusing Kershaw. From, you know, he certainly had his moments where he's got hit, you know, one pitch goes for a three-run homer, the Matt Adams St. Louis series you know, back in about 2010. But, you know, I think it's too easy to say, oh, the guy just can't handle October. I mean, I think there are reasons why, as I just explained, that he's been in situations in which sometimes he's succeeded, but other times he's failed.
Scott Miller joins us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. And Scott, it's interesting because we as baseball fans and people who love the game look at guys like Tom Glavine and Greg Maddux, who were some of the best pitchers that this game has ever seen. But you look at their postseason numbers, not necessarily the greatest numbers. And as a matter of fact, I think Clayton Kershaw is probably right into that group. But it's interesting how we view it in the moment. Let me ask you about the atmosphere out there, because we talked to Beto Duran yesterday, who said it seemed like it was a large contingency of Dodger fans there. Are you seeing the same thing? Is there any Rays love out that way?
Yeah, in the ballpark, it seems like 10-1 Dodger fans over Rays fans. There's no question. Now, it's funny, the hotel I'm staying, you know, it's kind of interesting. They, you know, there's some in the lobby over the last 2 days. I've seen there are a number of people wearing Dodger jerseys, but there's in the hotel, there's also a number of people wearing Rays jerseys. I saw some Kevin Kiermaier jerseys today, so I don't know if that's family members or who, but I have seen some Rays fans in the hotel. You know, also, just on a local note, interestingly, I'm sitting there quietly having my little bowl of oatmeal this morning off the lobby, and I looked up. I'm kind of people watching, and I look, and I see two guys wearing – I did a double take. I'm like, wait a minute, those are San Diego Padres caps, both of them, two guys wearing Padre caps. And, you know, so I kind of – I didn't go over and say hello to them because I was just half asleep still. I'm trying to just get through my coffee and oatmeal. But they weren't that far from me, and interestingly – a couple looked like a small family in a Dodger. They were all wearing Dodgers jerseys, struck up conversation with the two guys in the Padre caps. And, you know, they were talking about how much they worried about the Padres. And the Dodger fans told the two dudes in the San Diego caps, you know what? You guys were the one team we didn't want to play. You know, and then when we got you, we were all nervous until we got through you, which I I just, you know, kind of quietly noted that. Very interesting that, you know, that's where Dodger fans are at now, and that's how far the Padres have come this year.
I mean, that matches what you hear from some of the Dodger analysts, which you heard from some of the players during the season, that they recognize the Padres are knocking on the door.
Outside of Petco Park, I think Globe Life Field has been the most mentioned park on this show over the past couple of years because, number one, it's the newest park in Major League Baseball, and the guys argue with me on that all the time. But I want to talk about how it plays a little bit because last night we were talking that the roof was open. We couldn't remember if the Padres had played any of their games with the roof open, and I was just trying to get your kind of what you think about the stadium, roof open, roof closed, how it plays, all that stuff.
Yeah, I think the roof was closed mostly during the season. I honestly don't recall for sure the same as you on the Padres when they were here, if it was open or closed. I do know postseason, baseball's wanted the roof open for COVID-19 reasons. You know, they you always hear that, you know, airflow and fresh air moving in and out blows things out and cleans things. And, you know, especially once they decided to let 11,000 or so fans in, they don't want the roof closed and then all the air to just be sitting in the stadium with the players and fans and everybody breathing the same air. So that's why the roof has been open and will be open every night. It'll be interesting, by the way, if this series does go deep, if we do get into next week, it's supposed to cool down quite a bit. Unseasonably so in Texas next Tuesday, which would be game 6. I was looking at the temps. It's supposed to drop to a high of 46 and a low of 42 next Tuesday. So if we do get to game 6, that'll be interesting if they keep the roof open, but I think they will for health reasons. It favors pitchers. It seems to favor pitchers. I think it's a big ballpark. It's a big outfield. The whole park's big. I mean, everything in Texas, they build to ridiculously large proportions. you know, it looks like kind of an airplane hangar from the outside. Or first impressions, I'm not overly enamored with the park. I mean, I'm happy to be here and happy to be at the World Series. But, you know, it doesn't do anything for me in terms of new parks where you're like, oh, my gosh, that's nice or that's great or, you know, I mean, it's out in the middle of nowhere next to the old ballpark and next to the Dallas Cowboys monstrosity.
Oh, yeah, that thing is massive.
Right, and I'd say this new ballpark, the Rangers' new ballpark, it's bigger than what the Rangers' old ballpark is. So you got these three ballparks out here right near each other, and the Cowboys' place just dwarfs everything. The baseball stadium is like a little smaller than the Cowboys' new stadium. And then the Rangers' old stadium that is not that old. They built it in 95, that opened in 95. That's dwarfed by the other two. one thing I learned last night, yeah, it's crazy. You guys have seen how many great catches at the wall there have been. And Tony is a former outfielder. You'd be interested in this. Left center, right center, on either side of dead center, the fence lowers a little bit. It's weird. They built it with all these angles. And one of the radio broadcasters the other day said he counted 11 different angles that the ball could bounce off of the wall. But anyway, left and right center, just off the dead center, the part of the wall that the bullpens are on either side of dead center. And the wall dips a little bit. And so Cody Bellinger made another great catch last night up against one of the bullpens. And where the wall dips in right and left center, it dips to it's 6 feet high. So I think that lends itself to some of these great catches we've been seeing because, you know, I mean, guys aren't trying to jump up and over an 8-foot fence. It's only a 6-foot fence. So if the ball isn't going that far over the fence and you're an outfielder, you know, unless you're 4'11 or something, you go up against that 6-foot fence, you're going to have a chance to bring a lot of balls back. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, you saw that in the two different catches Mookie Betts had in the Braves series.
Yep.
He had one that was on a little bit further close to that center for wall, which is a little higher. So it didn't look as spectacular. It was equally as impressive. And then you had the one where it was a little bit where you're talking about, that 6-foot area where he goes up, it looks like he's like 12 feet high and brings a homer back. So I did notice that, but These dimensions, man, I wish they would just get back to just making the regular little half circle outfield out there. It just makes so much more sense. I got another one for you, Scotty. The free agency. I've noticed players going about it a little bit different. We know Trevor Bauer is the king troller of all teams. He's putting himself out there. Now I see Marcus Stroman getting in on the bid. He seems to be trying to work his way into to the Yankee rotation.
Yeah, how about that? It's I guess the moral of the story is God bless social media, right? It can as toxic and ugly as it gets, it also is like pre-classified ads, right? Hey, yeah. I'm available. So that'll be interesting. I'm assuming that if you're the Yankees and if you have interest, if you're the Yankees and you're running the baseball operations department, I think you know Marcus Stroman's out there.
Yeah.
I don't know
yeah.
that a tweet from Marcus Stroman saying, hey, look at me, I don't know if that's going to help sell a guy to the Yankees or not. I think the Yankees have the wherewithal to decide which pitchers they want to go after and then go after them. So it's pretty amusing, though, to watch, as you said, Stroman and Bauer both trying to auction themselves off.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, you can't be mad at him for trying this, but it does seem a little unorthodox about going it. But you know, social media does bring some unique ways to go about things. Scott, as always, man, appreciate you coming on. Please enjoy that game in that lovely new stadium, even though it's not the best on the eyes. We certainly appreciate your time, Scotty.
All right, my pleasure, guys. Take care. Have a good night. Enjoy the game tonight yourselves.
Thank you, Scott. Scott Miller there joining us there on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. SDCCU Online and Mobile Banking lets you do your banking from your smartphone. Message and data rates may apply. For details, visit SDCCU.com. Let's check traffic with Kelly Danik.
Traffic is sponsored by Lexus Carlsbad. Just one trouble spot in the North County, north downside of the 15 before Felicita. We have reports of a stalled car kind of between the HOV and the fast lane. That's north on 15 just before Felicita. Get big savings today on San Diego County's largest selection of certified pre-owned Lexuses. See special offers online at LexusCarlsbad.com. I'm Kelly Danik with Gwynn and Chris, San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.
Okay. Let's get into it a little bit here.
I love how you put that.
Chris Ello hit us with a hot take last night.
Woo!
He was feeling himself a little bit. And listen, I know Chris. He absolutely does not like the Dodgers. But like myself, he respects good baseball. But Scraby, I'll let you kind of go from here.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much for that. So Chris, yeah, as we've all been talking about, he's trying to prove that Clayton Kershaw is not the worst postseason pitcher of all time. So we tweeted this out last night, and he put it on.
Who tweeted it out?
Chris tweeted this out.
Oh, yeah. It sounded like you said we tweeted it
out.
Oh,
no, no. We did not tweet this out. We did not
tweet
this out.
Chris tweeted this
out. In fact, I put up a GIF of Peter Griffin from The Family Guy slowly backing out of the room.
into the bushes over
there? No, just out of the place and just get the heck out of there. But he tweeted, dear all of these sour Padres fans who call Kershaw the worst postseason pitcher ever, it's a bad look. This is LA's time. San Diego's day in the sun, not too far away. Now, let me break this down. I am okay with everything he said until he said, this is LA's time. I don't want it to be LA's time. I don't want to be reminded that it's LA's time. You should have just left that out and said, San Diego's day in the sun, not too far away. So, Chris, he definitely angered some people out there with his tweet.
Listen, I agree with your premise there that maybe he could have left that part out. But in all seriousness, I get what he's trying to say. Ultimately, as people who love the game of baseball and our Padre fans, you have to be able to remove your fan hat and just appreciate greatness. And you got to tip your hat to Clayton Kershaw. Yesterday, he was on point. And you know, as you heard Scott Miller say, there are many reasons why he hasn't had the type of success that I think we expect because of the success he has during the regular season. But never, once again, you know, I was talking about leadership in our monologue. He's always been one, despite good, bad starts, he's always in front of his locker to talk about it. Yesterday, he has a good, terrific start, dominant start, but I do believe it's going to take another one of those later in the series, maybe a deciding game four or a deeper into the series start where he has another one like that. Will really be the only thing he could do at this point to get people to change their minds, at least the perspective or the what's the word I'm looking for? The kind of idea that he's not a good postseason pitcher. The only way he's going to change that is by pitching in one of these late games and doing the same thing.
And you know what? I'm not going to lie. I probably will reference Clayton Kershaw at some point in the future as the worst postseason pitcher just to make a point or something like that. So I'm not going to ever say that I won't say that. But at the same time, you have to look at the numbers, and I think that's what Chris is doing. And Chris does not like the Dodgers people. Believe us. He likes the Rockies. He likes the Padres, of course, because he's lived here for such a long time. But he does not like the Dodgers.
He doesn't like the Dodgers or the Yankees. The two evil empires, as he likes to call them. He can't stand it. I think he's just making a point based on numbers with Clayton Kershaw. But that we digress. That was Chris.
Not us.
Just defending our guy. But I did understand why a lot of people were upset, especially with that L.A. time.
I don't need that. I don't need that.
When I read it myself. So I understand. All right. Hour in the books. Coming back with some Gwen versus the Fan. Yeah, you guys got a much, much better chance of winning the prize. It's Gwen and Chris, San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.